Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Recent evaluations have left some teachers and others with more questions than answers regarding methodology and meaning. What helpful information can be gleaned from an evaluation? By a teacher, a parent, a student? Do teacher evaluations help or hinder teaching efforts, students, and communities? In short, do teacher evaluations make the grade? Joining me in studio to talk about their evaluation experiences, the role these measurements play in our public education system, and their effects upon students, teachers, schools, and communities are John Sims, a teacher from Harrison Middle School in Albuquerque's South Valley, and Lisa Harris, a teacher at Moriarty High School in Moriarty, New Mexico. Thanks to both of you for being here today. Appreciate it. We'll be joined at the bottom of the hour from Las Cruces by phone by Chris Nielsen, a former teacher in New Mexico, Oregon, and North Carolina, who now devotes his time to advocacy on behalf of teachers, students, and parents. I do want to let our listeners know at the top of the show that we made a request for an appearance by a representative of the Public Education Department, or PED. We made that request at the beginning of the week to their spokesperson, heard nothing back, made a specific phone call to Matt Montano, the Director of Education Quality with the Public Education Department, and did not hear back from him. It is summer. We don't want to make any assumptions, but I do want to let people know that we did try to have a representative on. So, Lisa and John, let's get to know each of you a little bit, our listeners and myself. So, Lisa, let's start with you. What do you teach, and how long have you been teaching?
Well, currently, I'm a high school English teacher. I also, I'm the yearbook sponsor at Moriarty High School. I've been in the Moriarty Edgewood School District for 20 years, taught 5 years at the middle school and 15 years at the high school. I've been in education for 23 years. I'm also an adjunct professor. I've been in the teacher ed program both at UNM and at New Mexico Highlands University, teaching pre-service teachers. And I also serve as the New Mexico Council of Teachers of English president currently.
Now, tell us a little bit about your teaching philosophy, if you have one, and just briefly.
Well, one of the things I like about teaching is I'm in front of students every day. I'm working with them. I write with them. I read with them. And we try to come to some kind of understanding of this world and the world we live in and our roles in it. And so a lot of what I do is generated from the students, where they're at skill-wise and also where they want to be skill-wise when they leave my classroom. And we talk a lot about life. We talk a lot about who we are and what we want to be. I have freshmen. I like freshmen. If you have that age group of student in your household, you know that's kind of crazy, but I like freshmen because I like them because I get them when they come into high school. So not only are they trying to form themselves as human beings, but they're also trying to find their way into a high school setting with older kids. I also have seniors, and I've taught seniors for years. They get dual credit, college credit in my class, and I like to see them leave high school and be that person that helps them kind of try to find out who they are and what they want to be and where they want to go when they leave public school.
You know, I realized as I was preparing that I don't know Moriarty very well either. Is it a homogenous community, or describe it if you would?
I love Moriarty. The moment I sat in a classroom when I was a pre-service teacher, I sat in a middle school classroom and everything just kind of clicked for me. I love it there. It's a you know, semi-rural community. We have about 900 square miles that students come from. About 90% of them ride the bus into the schools that they go to. We have currently 3 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, and a high school the high school serves about 800. So we have a nice mix. I think we're the microcosm of what's happening in education because we have a nice mix of a little bit of upper income, a lot of lower income. We have a lot of students on free and reduced lunch. We see a lot of the effects of poverty and the role that plays in students' lives and the effect it has on their student achievement. But it's a nice mix of people. It's just a great community. And a lot of our former students have come back to be teachers as well. So I think that says a lot for the role models they saw in front of them as teachers. And they thought that would be a great career to have.
Absolutely. Well, John Sims, let's learn a little bit about you. What do you teach and for how long have you been teaching?
Well, on paper, they tell me I teach social studies for the sixth grade. I jokingly, but also seriously, believe I teach intelligent disobedience. I teach in a community that is, to put it mildly, is struggling. We have
30, and this is the South, this South
is,
Valley.
This is deep in the South Valley. 35 to 40% of the children that I serve are in trailer parks. We are 100% free and reduced price lunch. These are the places where these kids live are very, very, very vivid. And I do mean that in both the true sense of the word and in kind of a facetious kind of the word. We have kids who have witnessed gun violence, domestic violence, heroin addiction. There's a huge spice problem, which is synthetic cannabinoids. And, you know, these kids are, for the most part, are traumatized. And that really negatively affects about one-third of the kids. And it makes a very challenging situation to begin with. And so when we are told that while we are surfing this hurricane, sailing this hurricane, as educators, we are being shouted at from the shore by people who are looking at two or three grains of sand and telling us that we're not sailing correctly. And that just adds to the stress of an already nearly I wouldn't say impossible, but a societally improbable job.
All right. Now tell me briefly, teaching philosophy, what is yours?
I hear a lot of teachers say that they want to help kids get out of poverty. I disagree with that passionately. I don't think that's our job. I think our job is to help kids end poverty.
All right. Now, so, John, let me stick with you. Just, do you take any issue with teachers being evaluated generally?
Assessed to understand their own teaching, assessed to understand how well they are connecting with the community and with the kids, I have no problem with that. Being assessed primarily on test scores, that's not an effective
All
use
right.
of our
All
time.
Right. We'll dig into that, I'm sure. But Lisa, how about you generally? Do you take any issue with teachers being evaluated?
One of the things I teach in my classroom is something called a growth mindset. And a growth mindset says basically that you take feedback and you take that feedback and you try not to buck up against it and say, well, what do they know kind of thing. And so, yeah, as a 20-year teacher, I've gotten feedback from many different areas. From my students, I get feedback every day about how things are going. I get feedback from my colleagues. I've been in an English department that's been together for a very long time, and one of our former students is also a new teacher. I've gotten feedback from principals that I thought was very effective. And so I have no problem with people giving me feedback. My problem is when that feedback comes in the form of a number that doesn't have any meaning to it. And that's my problem with the current evaluation system.
All right. I hosted a call-in show toward the end of 2013 related to education, where I noted that perennially the state of New Mexico can be found at the bottom of lists ranking education performance and policy in a stated attempt to improve New Mexico's standing in the education realm. New Mexico's Public Education Department, or PED, has implemented an educator effectiveness system, quote, designed to establish a framework for continuous improvement and professional growth for teachers and principals, which in turn will promote student success. At the heart of the system are teacher evaluations. Before we look at your experiences and opinions of the new evaluation system, which is what we're talking about, tell me, why should anyone other than teachers be concerned with the new evaluation system? Who would like to take that first? John, go ahead.
Well, you know, I think this is part of the problem we as teachers are guilty of perpetuating upon ourselves. I think we are talking too often about our needs when really we're not there for us. We are there for the cultivation of young minds so that we can have a more robust democracy. And what ends up happening is these kids end up suffering. You see, when you have a situation where kids don't necessarily have a stable adult in their lives, and we teachers can have them, those of us in secondary schools, that's middle school and above, have them for about 1 to 2% of their waking hours for an entire year. If we can have a stable, loving, consistent environment for that child, we can literally save a life. And I don't mean that in a figurative or a metaphorical or a Hollywood sort of way. The toxic stressors upon these kids have to be released. Otherwise, they literally lead to early death. This is not my opinion. This is very solid medical sociology and social epidemiology research. And so when teachers are taken away from cultivating those relationships with those kids, it literally kills our kids. And therefore, it kills our future, the future of this democracy.
Anything you want to add to that, Lisa? Thank you. Oh. Thank you for that, John.
The reasoning behind this new teacher evaluation system, and the reason I think people should be very concerned about it, is this. It makes sense that the people closest to the kids be making the decisions about students' lives and their learning lives and their education. But what's happened is the people who make the decisions are the furthest away from the classroom, including people who've never been in the classroom. And so to truly understand the complexity of what happens and the myriad variables that happen in a classroom on any given day and 45-minute period that I have with students, which I do then have six more times during the day, to not understand that at a firsthand level makes it really suspect that they're making decisions for those students' lives from as far away as they can be. So that's one of the problems I have. The other problem I have with it is they keep saying that 99% of the teachers scored the highest.
I wanted to ask you about that. That 99.8% were effective.
Yeah. So if you look at any of the information coming out from other states who've adopted this new kind of evaluation system, they all quote the 99%. That's a statistic that gets said over and over and over again as if it's fact. But what's really important for people to know is that teacher evaluation data, how we scored prior to this year, has never been reported to the public education department. So I don't know, no one knows where that 99% came from, because they don't have access to prior teacher evaluations in the state of New Mexico and have never had them.
Mm. Now, John, you mentioned time being taken away from developing relationships with kids. So we're still sort of laying the groundwork here. Mm-hmm. This new evaluation system called TeachScape, what does it require teachers, professionals to do?
Well, what's interesting is there is a huge difference between what TeachScape was designed to do and the way it is being used. TeachScape is very explicitly about helping educators become more educated. That's what it was designed to do. It was a diagnostics tool adopted from another diagnostic tool by a woman named Danielson. And she designed this kind of as a way to check in. How are you doing? Are you doing okay here? And what kind of education are you going to need? What kind of professional development are you going to need? And again, I think most teachers want that kind of accountability. We don't show up wanting a paycheck. We show up wanting to make a difference. And so that in itself, as it was designed, well, that's a great idea. How it's being implemented, however, is punitive. So it's a tool, no doubt. But instead of it being a hammer used to build a house, it's a hammer being used for homicide.
Is it something, Lisa, you're required to spend time on each day? Or
Here's how I see TeachScape.
Okay.
It's a very, very expensive $4.5 million online drawer in which I'm supposed to put paperwork to house so that somebody somewhere is going to look at it at some point. I mean, it's just an online place to deposit paperwork. And so, yeah, I spend a lot of time uploading documents so that somebody somewhere is supposed to look at them, but I don't know who's looking at them. I know my principal, that's information that she has. Based on her observations, she also has that access to that information. But she has it in front of her anyway, but then I have to upload it to TeachScape. Well, at the school system, at the school site, what happens with TeachScape is it's supposed to be this online repository, but it takes forever. It spins, mm-hmm. We call it the spinning, it spins forever. And you spend hours sitting in front of it trying to get very simple documents up onto the site, and I don't know how they're supposed to be used. Now, the teacher evaluation system, when the data first came across the scores for our teacher evaluations, they were on TeachScape for about 24 hours. And when we all started looking at them and seeing that we had scores up there, we started asking what those scores meant. Those scores disappeared. And I got on last night, and there's nothing on there for me. There are no scores. There are no recommendations. There's no summative evaluation. Everything has been pulled off.
Absolutely. I'm seeing the same thing in APS, and I've heard that from a number of teachers. So the available information that we received, in my case and in my school, on the very last day of education.
It's no longer available.
Gone.
Wow. Did you receive a written report?
I've got my written report
okay.
right here.
All right. Well, we'll dig into that. I want to remind people we're talking today about teacher evaluations and education. There are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to collinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Collin Show webpage at kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Tell us, is a new system of teacher evaluation a good way to improve our education system in New Mexico? We'll be back after a short break with your calls and comments and more from our guests.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org.
What do you do when critters build a nest in that old truck you've been meaning to fix up one of these days, and then you discover they've chewed the seat cushions to line the nest? The wisest thing to do, Grasshopper, is to transform that damaged truck into perfectly formed radio. The method is simple and has been used by many wise ones over the years. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR, and a tow truck appears and hauls it away. Remember, always, 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about teacher evaluations and education. I'm joined by John Sims, a teacher from Harrison Middle School in Albuquerque's South Valley, and Lisa Harris, a teacher at Moriarty High School in Moriarty, New Mexico. Now, one of the things that I did, and it's probably how I got in touch with at least one of you in preparation for this show, is articles that came out about teacher evaluations. I posted a comment, hey, would you like to talk to me about this? If you're a teacher, get in touch with me. And I received numerous emails, and here's one I would like to read. Hello. I don't want to appear on the show for fear of retribution, but I will tell you four problems with the new evaluation system at my school. If you want to read them, include them as from an anonymous caller, that would be fine. Well, an anonymous emailer. Number one, I spent countless hours preparing and uploading documents, videos, and photographs, and answering questions on TeachScape, and yet I never received a score. This happened to one other teacher at my school, perhaps more, but I am certain about one. My principal told me that she couldn't access our data. We are both teachers of gifted students. Several times over the course of the year, I asked PED where my value-added measures would come from, since I don't see one group of students all day, or even students at the same grade level. No one ever answered the question. Number two, we were told that a portion of our score would come from the number of days we were present at school. I know that some teachers came to school even when they were sick so as not to be marked down for using their sick days. Number three, at our school we were observed but did not receive scores nor feedback within the 10 days as we were told by the state and district would happen. Then our principal posted the scores and comments a few minutes before she finalized them so that we were not able to meet with her and discuss the evaluation. For some of us, this resulted in her giving us scores that were lower than they should have been because she hadn't looked at or noticed what we had uploaded and marked us down for not having elements uploaded. Number four, our principal ran out of time to observe some of us and so pretended she had and made up evaluation dates, comments, and scores. I got nods from the teachers. I got chills as a parent. And I'm sure there are plenty of people listening who also are nodding and saying, yeah, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Glenn from Hemet Springs. Good morning, Glenn, and thanks for calling.
Thanks for having this. This is very, very important. My friend Lois Meyer, who has taught there at UNM in education, wrote a critique of Bush's No Child Left Behind. And I think that's where this whole mess got started, from what I understand. My wife teaches at Jemez Pueblo, and testing is killing kids, killing the desire for education. I remember listening to Democracy Now! Many months ago, a discussion about this and how many people in the country feel that there's a underground movement by corporations to take over our public education and, in effect, to eliminate unions and eliminate public education and just go with charter schools. I would like some comments on that. And I think it's quite telling that your invitation to people in Santa Fe to join the discussion resulted in nothing. I think our Governor Martinez is part of the problem here, too, just continuing to push the Republican No Child Left Behind version thereof. And I would like to ask teachers what unions are doing to change this whole mess. Thanks.
All right, Glenn, thanks so much for your call. And when we bring Chris on, we'll sort of look at that bigger picture. So maybe there are some other things and that we can address in his call. First, you know, we made this clear on the last show, but let's bring this home again. Who is high-stakes testing of students benefiting? Who's it? Is it benefiting the students?
The people who are making money off of it.
Okay, but is it benefiting the schools? Do they get a grade from it? Do the teachers? Obviously, the teachers.
Yes. So students are tested at the high school level. Students are tested in the 10th and 11th grade on the standards-based assessment. They're also given an end-of-course exam in other courses where they didn't have a standards-based assessment. The only reason they're given end-of-course exams that were created by a small group of teachers who went to the PED and they sat together and created these questions is simply to measure teachers' effect on student growth. Well, what we know from the research, and it plays out over and over and over again, is that student test scores, testing was for students was never meant to evaluate teachers. Mm-hmm. There's no connection. But they keep trying to use that to measure teachers.
Again, putting a number to something that
right.
And
so
hard to quantify that?
We don't. When we get information back from standardized testing, I don't know. The only thing I know from standardized testing is which of my students answered more questions correctly than another one. I don't know what they know or don't know. I don't get any feedback from that. So that means nothing to us. It's simply a number. And it's all geared towards the mean. And so what we know about the mean is it doesn't tell you anything either. All you know is there's a middle score or an average score there sitting there that somebody's being that's being then attached to the teacher. It's being attached to the schools. Students are being used as unpaid testing labor. There's no doubt about it. And I'm really tired of seeing that because kids hate school. They hate school more and more over the past 20 years because they're spending more time in rooms filling out bubbles that do not give them any information about what they know or what they don't know.
All right, let's move on to our next caller. It's Kathy from Albuquerque. Good morning, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning, and thanks to you for having the show, and thank all of you teachers who dedicate your lives to our children. I am not a teacher. I'm a business operations manager, and I am appalled at this current system. And I think a very good point was made. Actually, there's several good points. One is you can't be graded. A teacher cannot be graded by the level of the children that they have because obvious districts, parenting is going to change that. Second is, how could I, as a manager, which is a teacher of managing children, manage classrooms of 30 to 40 children? In business, you would never have more than 15 to 20 people maximum reporting to a supervisor. Why would you expect a teacher to be able to perform well, have the time to do all of this work of, you know, inputting this data, et cetera, when they're supposed to be out developing those relationships with the children in order to bring their levels up? So I guess my issue is right now, if we're spending this type of money on testing, why are we not instead putting more teachers on the floor and spending more time with children, which is what will raise their level of whatever it is that we're teaching? And I'll take my comments off air. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathy, for calling today. And John, you want to go ahead and make some comments?
Yeah, it's You know, it's the real issue here is that there are some paradigms that are just not working for our society. It's an ego over education, it's corporation over community, and it's profit over people. It's that kind of capitalistic approach, and I'm all for capitalism. I do like my iPod.
Maybe we can say corporatistic.
Yeah, or maybe capitalism without a seatbelt. This whole idea is leading us. Well, it's not leading us. We are in an educational quagmire right now, and that is leading to educational apartheid. What these test scores do tell us is something we could do without the $98 per test. It's going to cost $98 per test for every kid, third grade to eighth, and then in 10th and 11th grade as well.
Well, and I think I asked you, how many students do we have in New Mexico? And there was no clear answer, but even if it's several hundred thousand times $100 rounded off a student, that's a fair chunk of change.
Right. And it's, you know, if we're going to stick with a business analogy, I'm not sure we're getting a return on our money.
We aren't. Mm-mm. It's not giving you any information. For $98 to sit some student in front of a computer screen is fine if you're getting really quality information back and that information is being disaggregated in a way that teachers can inform their instruction that will then help the student get better as a student.
Well, and the thing is with the test scores, if you want the test scores to go up, test scores is not what you actually assess. We know what works with kids. There is no archetype with teachers. I want to make that very clear. There's no personality, but there are certain practices that we do know that work. But we're just not doing them. It's cultivating trust and hope with the kids, preparing your butt off, and constantly asking questions of the kids. We know that's what actually brings up test scores and improves communities. We're just not willing to do it.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring in our next caller, Mary from Albuquerque. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on.
Excellent.
I just have a comment. I'm a 24-year veteran of APS. I work with some of the toughest kids in the district. Many are homeless, and many have parents who are either incarcerated or deceased from drug addiction. And where the rubber meets the road, I think that what needs interjected into this is what the eval process and the whole mean-spiritedness coming from our governor on down, and actually even from our president now, who has deemed that we'll be moved at will to a school that that we don't have a stake in, and that's coming up next year, is what we're doing to the teaching force in certainly the state of New Mexico, which is alarming, but as a nation as a whole. And as my last check showed, we have 440 openings for teachers in APS right now, and that's not budged. That's not even outside of our city. Many, many young people have despised the testing that they've been subjected to. So the last thing they're going to do is enter into a college for the school of education. So we really have choked off the pipeline coming in through the whole approach to education now. And at the same time, we're hemorrhaging the exit end of the equation. I'm leaving after next year. I can hardly wait. I loved my career up until the beginning of last year. And as one teacher blogger put it, at that point it felt like corporate snakes had slithered in under the door of each classroom in our state. And at this point, I feel like I'm participating in child abuse, and ethically and morally won't stay past my 25 years. I speak for many, many colleagues. I think we're going to see another huge exodus of teachers in our state at the end of next year, and many are currently looking for a way to get out now. So in addition to this whole conversation, we're looking at a teacher force crisis right now in our state, and I'll listen to the comments offline.
Mary, thanks so much for calling today, and I know you all want to comment. I do want to read one other little snippet of something I got from a teacher. Many teachers who received insufficient scores on their evaluations are embarrassed or afraid to talk to anyone. It's really changed the atmosphere in our school, and I'm sure other schools, I hope you get some teachers who can talk during your show. Well, you two are here, and I know you want to talk and you want to comment on what Mary had to say. Who would like to go first? Lisa?
I feel like I was born to be a teacher. I feel more at home in front of students, learning, working, struggling, writing, reading, discussing, than I feel anywhere else. I started looking for a job in a private school because I know that private schools aren't going through this. Their teachers are valued. Their teachers are treated like teachers in Finland. Finland said, why on earth would you do this to teachers? We support our teachers. We incentivize coming into the profession. We recruit, and we don't have a recruitment. Who would want to come in and do this job? And so for me, a 20-year teacher in my community who loves what I do, for me to be looking for a job in a private school so that I can escape what's happening is I'm spending more time trying to figure out what they're trying to do to rank teachers and what they're trying to do to assign a score to me than I am preparing for my students this August. I would much rather be sitting here talking to other teachers about what the great and sharing our great practices and collaborating than I would having this conversation with you, honestly.
Well, and that's what I was sort of getting at in reading that comment. You know, collaboration may disappear because people are embarrassed, people are afraid. I don't know. Maybe I'm assuming something. John, you want to add to this a little?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people look at this and they think, oh, it's just the law of unintended consequences. Well, that's not true. This is the law of intended consequences. This has been tried. This model has been tried in numerous states, in numerous municipalities. And we get the same results. You see, I completely disagree with people who say our educational system is failing. It is working exactly the way it was intended. 50% of teachers quit in their first 5 years. Isn't it interesting that the dropout rate for teachers is almost exactly the dropout rate for kids? This is a system that is in balance. Go to any person on the street and ask them, look at the school in the high resource area and look at the school in the low resource area, which is doing better on test scores. I don't care whether you're in Mississippi or in Montana, whether you're in Albuquerque or in Albany, you are getting the same results. Now, there are outliers. There are outliers when people say, you know, that's enough, ya basta. And we say, no, we're going to focus on the kids and the community instead of the corporations and profit. Once we do that, we know great things happen in education. So it's not a mystery what we need to do to improve our democracy and to improve our educational system. Again, I just don't think that we're upset enough yet to upset the political boundaries that have been put in front of us. Once we do that, I think we have a great, great future in education ahead of us.
You know, let's bring in our guest on the phone here now, because we've been sort of skirting around this big picture. And I know Chris Nielsen has some words about this. He's joining us now by phone from Las Cruces. He is a former teacher, now education advocate. Welcome, Chris Nielsen.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Chris. Is education advocate an accurate term for you?
Yeah, I like that one.
All right. Well, you have taught in New Mexico, Oregon, and North Carolina, but you quit. And there's a letter about why you quit, and it was published in the Washington Post. And I believe we have a link to that up on our Colin Show webpage. But tell us briefly, why did you quit?
Well, the guests you have on now have given a pretty good background. And the gentleman, John, I believe is his name, put a pretty clearly. I mean, we've already seen this in other states. And the reason that I quit from North Carolina is because North Carolina is 2 years ahead of us as far as this goes. TeachScape was already in the schools two years ago. We had Common Core coming down the pipe already. North Carolina, I think, is number two in the nation, right behind Texas as far as the most testing, which recently changed. So North Carolina is probably one now. But the fact is, I started seeing things change from my career in Albuquerque and Oregon, where I was basically free to be a teacher, to North Carolina, where I was now just a manager, where I was now just a facilitator of test prep.
You know, Chris, I want to just expand here a little bit, because I keep thinking about two words that go together: teaching profession. And then I hear from teachers, and it doesn't seem like it's heading in the direction of being a profession.
No, not anymore. It's heading in the direction of being a hierarchy, a corporate hierarchy, where you have the executives on top and the managers in the middle and excuse the term, peons on the bottom, who are expected to follow directions. TeachScape is, in my opinion, one of the worst things that can happen to the profession. And, you know, we hail it as this wonderful thing that's standardized, and it's the same for all teachers, and it keeps principals on the same page and keeps them from being too subjective. On the other hand, what it does is take every ounce of every little minute of time away from an administrator who should be doing authentic assessment of his teachers and sticks that principle to a rubric and to a script. I mean, it. Trust me, meetings with a principal are not the same as they used to be. Now they're just, oh, the principal has to sit there here and read this word for word, and there's not enough time for feedback or real true discussion. So we don't have a profession really going on anymore. We have kind of a top-down corporate thing where you're given a number for your performance. Well, if your number doesn't quite match up, then something's going to have to happen.
Well, and maybe listeners, parents, community members need to ask, is that what we want from our teachers? So I want to ask you, where does, with regard to the big picture of education in this country, where does New Mexico fit in this big picture?
Well, I think of New Mexico as kind of a laboratory. Yes, there are states that are ahead of us, but when I came back home, I noticed that not only are we implementing a lot of the things that the other states have been doing and floundering all over, but we have brand new things coming in that are being tried, and that's mostly because of the organization that created and supports our secretary designate. New Mexico is the new laboratory. Everything's being tried here, and teachers feel that, because when things are being tried and constantly experimented and the rules are changed almost weekly, it starts to hurt. I mean, you just can't play games like that with public schools, because ultimately that weight comes down on one set of people, and that's children. We're not supposed to be experimenting with children.
All right. If you would like to join in our discussion about teacher evaluations in education, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Will the new teacher evaluation system hurt or help our teachers and students and communities? We'll be back with your calls, there are many, your comments, and to hear from our guests after this short break.
Spirit Academy, Spirit Children's Indigenous Survey and Opening, Field Trips, a school where math minds, individuals, leaders and writers, Spirit Children's Academy, Science, Social, Guides, Daily Medic, Art, and all class size, financial aid available projects, and at Chinook Spirit, nurturing, that's passionate readers and writers, love of science, social studies, music, art, and P.E. Financial aid available, learn more at ChinookSpirit.org, that's C-H-I-N-O-O-K, Spirit.org, a message from the tax-exempt CSCA.
When choosing wine, do you stop to think about the effect it has on your health and well-being? And do men and women engage with it differently? From tongue to kidneys, this month's Well Woman Radio explores how to be a healthy wine drinker with some added tips to make your taste buds tingle. Join us this Friday morning at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM. Cheers.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about education and teacher evaluations. I'm joined in the studio by Harrison Middle School teacher John Sims and Moriarty High School teacher Lisa Harrison. On the phone with me is Chris Nielsen. He's a former teacher in New Mexico, Oregon, and North Carolina, and now an education advocate. And I want to read a couple of comments that have come in via our webpage and email. Katie Stone writes, special ed, gifted ed input was excluded during program formation, meaning the evaluation program, but stagnant test scores can hurt teachers' evaluations. Where is the incentive for those valuable teachers? And again, just more question about who's leaving, who's staying, and why. And here's a web comment from Francesca. Student testing takes 12 to 15 hours to administer to third to fifth graders, longer than the SAT, the LSAT, the MCAP for doctors and lawyers. Also, it costs New Mexico $23 million, which is paid to out-of-state firms and administrators. So let's go ahead and take our next call. It's Tanya from Albuquerque. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Go right ahead.
So what I wanted to talk about is as I'm listening to the program, waiting for my airtime, it's a simple paradigm, what's happening in education. It's like a leveraged buyout, but in this case, it's the leveraged destruction of the public schools. And it really is a travesty, such a poor state that we're sending spending these millions and millions and millions of dollars out of state, out of country, in fact, that we need right here for our needy families, which we have a lot of, as is proved by the statistics of child welfare, us being at the bottom. And they justify the system by removing teachers from the classroom. I'm a teacher in APS. They remove us from the classroom by preventing us from having teaching time. All that time is not just those 10 days a year or 20 days a year that you're testing, because we have a number of tests we give, but it's also the prep time, the trainings, you know, valuable professional development time is used in learning not to look at the test, not to discuss the test, and you have to sign affidavits, and it's very uncomfortable. And it's really punitive to our administrators because, as the last guy was saying, they can't do their jobs because they're embroiled in this 3 times a year evaluations in every classroom, reading the script, you know, making sure every I is dotted and T is crossed, and all their free time is spent in trainings and special meetings to assure that they're doing this to fidelity. And we're our administrators wear a lot of hats, and they, I just saw them this year, it was awful, canceling opportunities to interact with children, to be involved in the educational process, because they have to meet these deadlines and they have to fulfill an unreasonable burden with these tests. And the whole purpose of it is that then they give us these really expensive tests and prove that we have failed as a system. And when you think that 40% of our budget is spent on education, well, this is being brought down by ALEC and so forth, and the rich people who don't want us to be spending that 40% of the American budget on education. So they're proving that, oh, the system isn't working. And why I say it's a leverage destruction is because they're setting us up to fail, and it's just humiliating and upsetting to be, to know that the future of our country is these children who are being misused and underserved.
All right, Tanya, thank you so much for bringing to light so much. And Chris, I just want to ask you, Tanya did a great way of describing things. Are people taking issue with this system across the country, and what can be done?
Yeah, absolutely. What's funny, she actually brought up the fact that the whole system is designed to get teachers in public schools to fail, and that's absolutely true. The hardship for New Mexico is that New Mexico has a history of appreciating charter schools, because we have a history of charter schools that came in and they were organic and they were teacher-grown and they were local, so they served a local community, whereas now we have an influx of charter organizations that are corporate-owned. They're private, and they're run by either for-profit or at least for lots of money organizations, and they come in saying, oh, but we're the same, we're still public charters, but that's actually not true, because they bring outside people, they take over local schools. I'm pretty sure that's what was going on in Moriarty not too long ago when they were, you know, Hannah was trying to keep some schools open for low enrollment. Her main goal was to replace those with charters. So, and the interesting thing is, out in the East, when you said, oh, no, corporate charters are coming, they would say, oh, no, they're not. But here in New Mexico, we don't quite know the difference yet. We have a trust of charter schools because they've had a good history in our state. But it's coming. I mean, Albuquerque is surrounded by these people. If you haven't heard of the Broad Foundation or Connections Academy, who's already there, these are people who are coming in because they want money. They want to make money off of that budget that Tanya was mentioning. And they're not here for kids. They're here for data and money.
All right. Either of you want to comment briefly? Just add something.
You know, there are only 4 questions that need to be asked in education. What is education for? What is education against? Who is education for, and who is education against? I don't think any parent, student, educator, or administrator has been asked these questions. But what we're speaking about, each of the individual things that Chris has mentioned and the callers have mentioned, they are symptomatic because those questions are being answered. But I don't think they are being answered on behalf of we the people.
All right. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Charles from Rio Rancho. Charles, thanks for joining our conversation.
Yes, and thank you very, very much for this conversation. I'm calling both as a parent of two elementary age daughters who it pains me so much to see them spending so much time on testing and the preparation for the testing. But also, you know, and I don't want to repeat the litany of things that other people have said about the consequences. You know, there's so many teachers leaving the profession and very few people entering the profession. But, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that teaching is the lowest paid profession in New Mexico. You know, the Journal had an article yesterday on the front page showing mechanical engineering grads getting 70-something thousand a year in the first year, while teachers were at the very bottom of all the list, just starting at 32. And, you know, I think that, you know, these kinds of things are going to continue to happen unless people work on the fundamental questions that one of your guests just touched on. Mm. And to change the relationship of who really guides those questions, is it teachers and the professionals in the education profession who are guiding what happens in education policy, or is it politicians and their corporate backers that are going to guide what happens in education? And I think the only answer to that is going to come from people working collectively. And for educators, they have to get involved in their union. They have to be union members and have a voice. You know, in Santa Fe, the local there is saying no to participating in the so-called merit pay program that's tied to the student test scores. And the legislature, if we don't want things to get worse, we have to hold on to control of the House of Representatives. And both the unions, the AFT and the NEA, are working hard on that and working hard at the legislature directly, too. But who is elected is so important. People have to get involved in the election.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Charles. And Lisa, you're not a union member, are you?
I'm not.
So who do you have fighting for you?
I don't know. I keep equating it to if you hand a surgeon a tool and the surgeon turns to the person and says, this tool's broken, you don't blame the surgeon that the tool's broken. You don't send them to professional development to learn how to use that broken tool. You trust what the surgeon's saying to you. And until teachers are seen as professionals who can be trusted, I have 2,800 students I've seen. I have firsthand knowledge of 2,800 learners. And if you add that to the other English department teachers in my school, I mean, we're talking about a lot of time with students, millions of hours of student teacher hours in our careers. And so I think people really need to listen to teachers and see them as professionals. But honestly, I'm not an hourly worker. I don't understand why. I can see having a bar association for teachers, like the AMA, where you go before the bar and you're held accountable by a jury of your peers. But I don't want to. I don't buy into a political system where then I have to elect somebody to represent me again, and they may or may not represent my best interest. So we're not union in Moriarty. We have a small district. I have equal access to my superintendent on any given day, and we're very lucky that we have an administration that really, really listens to us and fights for us at the state level. That's who represents me.
And John, not to turn this program into union versus non-union, but are you a member of the union?
I am a member of the Albuquerque Teachers Federation, and it's a very intimate decision whether a teacher chooses to be part of a union or not, and it's also very contextualized. I can tell you that under certain principles, certain teachers will not feel the need to be in a union. Under other principles, you know, people who tend to be sociopathic in their approach to their position, you're going to want to be part of the union. But that's what's great about it is there's that flexibility within that system.
Well, and let's leave our discussion at there, and let's bring in Jenny from Peralta, who would like to tell us something about quitting teaching herself. Hi, Jenny. Thanks for joining our discussion.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
Fine, and you?
Good.
Good.
Yeah, I went into public education because, like you say, I feel like I'm a born teacher, and taught for 9 years in California and New Mexico. And the main reason I quit teaching in New Mexico was just the degree of nepotism. I just felt like it was much more important to hire somebody's cousin or sister or nephew than it was to get a good qualified teacher. I personally have no problems with the testing or merit pay or any of that, because if you're a really good teacher and you're doing your job well, those tests are not hard, and your kids should be able to pass. And I'm a 10th through 12th grade science teacher.
All right.
And I just feel like until the priority gets shifted to the kids and away from let's get our, you know, favorite relative in here, then nothing's going to change in this state. And that's just my experience.
All right. Thanks so much for your call this morning, Jenny. And Chris, I want to get back to you because I asked you a question about what can be done, what is working across the country for people who are challenging this system. Is that, can you briefly address that?
Sure. The number one most effective thing I've seen so far, especially in New York State, is parents. A parent uprising is a good word for it, mm-hmm. I think, in New York. It's been tough in New Mexico because it's so spread out. But this is one of the reasons it's so important for teachers to feel safe to talk to parents about their jobs. Because once the parents are educated on what's happening to their children from these corporate and Santa Fe top-down policies, they're not going to be happy about it. I think they're going to be enraged about it. And I honestly think that this coming school year is going to be a tipping point for this because we have a whole bunch of new things coming in that are going to affect children directly. And I think the parents are going to have questions. Now, historically, and not for all parents, but for some, it's almost natural to walk into the school screaming and yelling. So be prepared. I mean, be prepared to educate these folks because they really just don't know. All they know is that their kids are starting to hate school. You know, lots of kids already hate school, but the ones who don't are you're gonna start seeing some real effects. So once those parents start rising up and asking questions, we need to be open with them and we need to educate them with the facts. And not only that, but we need to bring them over and ask them to get active.
Now, we do have a web comment, Chris. Parents can decline the test for their children, except 10th and 11th grade, which are tied to graduation. Also, parents can vote against officials who support the program. Now, there is a specific site in New Mexico. Is it newmexicoopt-out.org? Is that the correct?
That's right.
Okay, so people can go there. Lisa, mm-hmm. is there anything good about this new evaluation system? Is there anything that ought to be perpetuated?
It got teachers opening their doors and speaking out. You know, traditionally, we like to spend our time with students. We like to work really hard with students. We spend time at proms and baseball games and basketball games. And you know, it got us actively involved in the conversation. And I think that's huge. And I think that'll add to the professionalism. I do have some serious issues with, you know, I have a document sitting in front of me. My evaluation was incorrect. I sent letter or emails to the PED. They declined to give me information. And now I have a second corrected eval that's wrong. And so I did grow. So but now I have three scores that tell me something about myself that mean nothing to me.
You're not sure. John, how do you want to wrap things up here? What's important for us to take away here?
Malcolm X said it best. He said, only a fool would let his enemy teach his children. And I think that's what we are allowing right now. And parents standing up, teachers educating everyone, including themselves, that is our solution.
Thanks so much to our guest today, Albuquerque's Harrison Middle School teacher John Sims, Moriarty High School teacher Lisa Harris, and former teacher and now education advocate Chris Nielsen for making themselves available to our listeners. Thank you. And thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Apologies to anyone we did not get to. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Kave Movahead has produced our program today. Michael Hess has handled our phones. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.